Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Euros with Football Social Daily.
For a fleeting moment, it looked like football was coming home. But instead, football is heading to Rome. The Italians are European champions at the expense of a young English team who undoubtedly have a very bright future. This is Football Social Daily. And on today's show, we dream of what could have been and work out why it didn't quite happen. I'm Jim Salverson. Niall McCorn on today's podcast. How are you doing, Niall?
I've been better, Jim. I felt better on a Monday morning, to be honest with you. But I'm all right, all things considered.
Yeah, a sore head?
No,
just,
not at all.
Or just hurt feelings?
No, just the one. I've been feeling a little bit under the weather the last couple of days. Nothing COVID-related, thankfully. So I stuck clear of the alcohol last night. I don't feel particularly good. I'm a bit disappointed today about the game, to be honest, but I'm sure we'll come on to it.
Well, alongside Niall, definitely a sore head for Marley Anderson coming off the back of a three-day stag do, followed by England in a major European final. How are you feeling, Marley? How much can you remember from last night?
Last night I can remember a fair bit. The other 2 days, not as much. Bruised pride, bruised ankle. I fell down some stairs on Friday night with a kebab in my hand, so it wasn't the best of weekends.
Did you save the kebab?
I didn't know. So basically, I'd ate most of it, and then I missed a step going down some steep steps and rolled my ankle. And the lad I was with was like, it was just funny as hell. Like, it wasn't
Conor McGregor.
It wasn't drunk related. Yeah. It wasn't like drunk related. You just missed the step. Like, it could have happened at any point, but it was drunk related, and then some kebab meat went on the floor, and I got up and went home. That was about it. But yeah, last night was a bit quieter because obviously you've got to get up for work this morning. But yeah, just disappointed. It was coming home for 2 minutes, and then you're almost like waiting for England to concede, and you're thinking it can't be this easy. So
it wasn't this easy. It turns out that's the focus of today's podcast. Is all about that game, England versus Italy. We're just going to focus on exactly what happened, exactly what went wrong, why it didn't come home. And let's start at the start, because I think everyone was a little bit shell-shocked by the beginning of the game. A goal within the first 5 minutes, and a goal for Luke Shaw as well, who the odds on him scoring at any point in the game were 33-1 going into that, by the way. So no one fancied him to get the goal. When I saw the team sheet coming out, and we talked about this on Friday's podcast, how we thought Southgate should set up for this one. And I think we kind of universally thought that the four at the back was the way to go. He set up with the five at the back, with Kieran Trippier coming in for Saka, who was dropped to the bench. Did he get his tactics right from that first 10, 15 minutes, Niall? Did it look like Southgate had picked it?
Yeah, I think you have to say yeah, because you score inside 2 minutes and you take the game to Italy. And I thought England started a little bit nervously, to be honest. Italy, I remember it so clearly. Italy had kickoff and probably passed the ball around for the first minute or so. And then it came to Harry Maguire at the back, who basically passed it straight out for a corner. And I thought, here we go. The nerves are starting to come now. England are going to start to shake. Then the corner dissipated into nothing. And then Harry Kane just raked a great ball over to Trippier. And then the cross was just over Kane's head. And I've seen a few people slag Kane off about his performance last night. When actually, I mean, there's so much more to centre forward play than scoring goals. The way he actually picked the ball up just on the inside of the centre circle, inside Italy territory, whizzed it out to the far right, and then continued his run through the centre. And Trippier actually waited for Kane to make the run into the middle. In the end, the cross was too high, but there was Shaw at the back post. And 1 minute, 57 seconds in, England have got the lead in a European Championship final. It was absolutely euphoric. And there is such a thing, I think, as scoring too soon. But I mean, if anyone had said early goal in the final, you just absolutely take it. I don't think you can blame Southgate's system with the way things went early doors, and even the first 45 minutes. Italy did start to grow back into the game, maybe the last 10, 15 minutes of the first half. But I thought the first half, England looked accomplished. They didn't look concerned by anything Italy did. Chiesa and Insigne had a few sort of pot shots, I suppose you could say. I thought Chiesa looked very dangerous and determined all night, to be honest with you. But I thought the first 45 minutes, you have to look at the team selection and say, Southgate's done it again. He's got it right. And obviously it didn't transpire that way by the end. But I think from what we saw early doors, which I guess is what you're asking me, Jim, I think, yeah, you can say that Southgate got it right. But getting it right at the start of the game and tinkering and making the right changes at the right time is a part of management that that is essential. And maybe it's something that Southgate didn't quite get right on this occasion, which I'm sure we'll come on to.
Scoring too early, as Niall says, is a bit of a cliche. It does get rolled out. It was certainly rolled out after the match. I think it was Roy Keane. He was first to hit the score too early buzzer and came out with that in his post-match analysis. Marley, is there such a thing as scoring too early in this scenario? Because I guess what happened to England was they got the goal and then almost spent the next 88 minutes defending that goal to a certain extent. But there's nothing to say that would have been any different if England would have continued to be more offensive if they hadn't got the goal.
Yeah, when the goal went in, you know, I'm thinking, you know, brilliant. You know, the hardest thing to do is score against that Italian defence with all the, you know, all the experience and all the rest of it that they've got, and the world-class goalkeeper and centre-backs who know every trick in the book type of thing. So when it went in, you're thinking, you know, that's the hard thing done. But, I mean, I've sat there with a few mates and I said, right, who's gonna be the one who says, have we scored too early? Because it just affects your outcome. You can't approach the game in the same way anymore, because you're thinking, you know, do we defend this, or do we, you know, try and push on and leave ourselves open at the back or whatever? So it's sort of like a catch-22 situation, because I think we scored because of our wing-backs. You know, Trippier crossed it from one wing and it went too far, but because Shaw was on the other side and he's got more license to roam, if he was playing like a left back in a back four, he'd have never been in that position.
Never seen him do that much this Euros because of that, I guess, have we? We haven't seen those overlapping runs that he did so well this season just gone for United.
Yeah, well, we did in the Ukraine game, but that was almost like a training game towards the end, wasn't it? Because it was that easy. But yeah, you know, when he came onto it, I'm thinking, well, we've scored because of our wing backs there, and that's great. That's, you know, justified selection. So, but then, you know, when you start with a back five and then you get the lead, you've got nothing to switch to that's more defensive. So you're like stuck with the back five, and you're thinking, you know, they've got 88 minutes to work out this system, and if they get a goal, which they did, then you change to the 4-3-3 or whatever, 4-2-3-1, whatever it was. So yeah, it was like the tactics worked almost too well, because it happens in 2 minutes and you get the goal, and then you're thinking, you know, oh, you know, what do we do here? Do we stick or twist?
Should England have gone for the jugular at that point, Niall? Because as Marley said, they wanted to protect the lead to a certain extent. Or was it a case of Italy just stopped them going for the jugular, that they stopped England being able to create more despite a desire or despite a want to do so?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go for the second goal. I understand what Marley's saying about, you know, when you're 1-0 up, you're worrying about whether to pile too many bodies forward just in case you leave yourself open to an equaliser. And then, you know, what happens when teams get momentum, particularly this Italy team, we've seen it a couple of times throughout the Euros, when they do score once, they have a tendency to really push on and grab the others, which is what we've seen in extra time. I think in the Austria game, Austria did well, they stood firm. went into extra time, and then as soon as Italy scored one, that was it. Austria had cracked, and then they went through and scored another. I think there's always a danger of that, but when you go 1-0 up so early in the game, it was basically like starting the game with a 1-0 lead. And England started the better team, and I think they did have opportunities. I mean, I was crying out for people to have a long shot or two, and I know Donnarumma's an excellent goalkeeper, which I'm sure we'll come on to when we saw the penalty shootout, but deflections, anything, corners, anything like that. I mean, there were a few moments I thought England could have made more of it. There was a free kick at the end of the first half where Calvin Phillips' delivery was terrible, and a couple of times his delivery was terrible, and I just think we didn't make enough of the opportunities we had from set pieces, particularly free kicks into dangerous areas. Trippier was on the pitch. Why is Calvin Phillips taking the free kick? So there are a few question marks there, I think, in terms of whether England could have scored another goal. I definitely think they had enough of the ball, particularly in the first half, to get a second goal. Whether that would have doubled the pressure with Italy in the second half coming right back at England and pretty much dominating the whole of extra time as well, bar a 5-minute period. I don't know. Should England have gone for the jugular? Well, I think that's what people have been asking to see all tournament. And Gareth Southgate has kind of hushed those people up by winning the games in the way that he's won the games. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of commentators and pundits that will say, well, actually, England, with the talent that they've got, they should really have gone for it a little bit more. The one thing that the Italians do have at the back, like Marley said, is experience. You know, 34-year-old Bonucci, 36-year-old Chiellini. And as old and as wily and as experienced as they are, the amount of pace that England have got in their team that they just simply didn't use. You know, Rashford, we'll come on to it, I'm sure, but I thought Rashford was thrown under the bus. Come on, run around for 15 seconds and then score us a penalty, mate.
It's a very
Sancho, one of the most creative players in Europe this season. Bags of goals and assists for Dortmund in one of Europe's top five leagues and barely had a look in all tournament. Foden's pretty quick as well. Only played two games in the groups. Didn't really see him after that, bar an occasional bench appearance. So, you know, there's a few question marks to be had. But certainly in terms of could England have gone for a second, I think they could have done, and I think they probably should have done as well. But hindsight's a wonderful thing. And what I will say on the whole about the final is obviously I'm disappointed, but I've never really been, I've made no secret of this on the podcast, I've always been club over country. I'd rather Portsmouth win something than England win something. And some people can't understand that, but that's just how I feel. But this is the closest I've felt to the England team since I was a little boy. And I think that that's a testament to them and their character and what they've been able to achieve throughout this tournament. But also, I never want to finish a final thinking what might have been. You always want to finish a final and think they've left it all out there. I'm proud of them. And I am proud of this England team because they've gone further than any other England team in my lifetime and any other England team for the last 55 years. But there is a nagging feeling at the back of my mind of what might have been. And that's the awful thing. You don't ever want to finish a final thinking what might have been. You want to know that you gave it your all. And I think it's only fair that those criticisms are brought to light. One, because it's kind of a form of therapy after you've lost a final in such fashion. But also perhaps a chance to learn with the World Cup 18 months away and now expectations probably as high as they've ever been for the England team. So certainly a bit of mixed emotions this morning, just even generally looking back on the game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I said on Friday, I said I wasn't going to be disappointed if England didn't win this final because I was so proud and pleased with the progress made in this tournament. And I kind of stand by that. I don't think it stings as much as it would otherwise. And I think we'll see a new generation of football fans who are much more engaged in their national teams now than they have done previously, based on not only the success of this national team, and they have done well getting to the final, but also the characters that are within it. In terms of the game itself, and we will get onto the substitutions or the lack of substitutions shortly, but did the equaliser, Marley, feel inevitable the more the game went on? Because England started with a really strong press. The team as a whole were pressing on to the Italians. There was a lot of running in midfield from the England team as well. And the longer it went on, the more leggy and tired that midfield began to look. And the more the Italians grew into the game. I think I saw a stat midway through the second half where the Italians had 78% of the possession or something like that. So they dominated possession. They dominated chances as well. So was it just a matter of time before they got the goal?
Yeah. It definitely looked like that, you know. When, you know, I was saying to my mate who I was watching it with, like, you can't give 70% of the possession away for 40 minutes and not expect to concede. Like, at some point, you know, you can have 10 minute spells of 70% possession and you can survive, but you know, it was the entire second half until it's even some of the first half as well, but mainly the second up until they got the goal. And then immediately England changed and almost had the better of it when it was 1-1 again. So it was like, you know, could we not have played like that a little bit more, been a bit braver? Because we know how good we are in possession now. We did, you know, remember the Denmark game and just nullified that last 10 minutes when they were desperately trying to get the ball. And we just simply said, you're not having it. We're going to keep it for 5-6 minutes. And they were that good at it. So, yes, it's just a case of what might have been, isn't it? You know, if you did this at this time. But you can't expect to not concede in a whole second half of just letting them have the ball and just hoping they don't score. But having said that, it was still a really scrappy, scruffy, horrible goal to concede. Like, it could have been defended and cleared, you know, stopped two or three separate occasions before Benucci eventually gets it into the, you know, bundles it over the line. But I mean, I thought Pickford did quite well for that goal.
Great little reaction save, wasn't it, onto the post?
Yeah, I was immediately like critical. You know, when you see it the first time, I thought, oh, what have you done there? How have you let that under you? But he did wedge it. Like, he got down to it so quickly that, like, he sort of wedged it. Like, his hand came down onto the ball and it didn't move as much as he wanted to. He couldn't pour it out and scoop it out. And then obviously, you know, Kane can't react in time to block Benucci putting it in on the line. But so it's disappointing to have that, to concede like that, but it was coming at some point. So, you know, you can't really be too surprised when it did happen.
In terms of the changes that England made, they were few and far between, particularly in normal time. It was almost as if England were trying to settle for extra time. I thought at one point we saw Saka on for Trippier. That wasn't until the 70th minute. We saw Henderson come on for Rice a little bit later. That was only due to Declan Rice picking up a knock as well. No Grealish until extra time. Do you think, and I know we've said hindsight's a wonderful thing, Niall, but do you think we wanted to see more sooner? I seem to remember Joe Cole saying a few years ago, when you're in that kind of situation, your backs are against the wall on an international football, you want a player like Grealish, or he didn't use Grealish as an example, but he said you wanted a player on the pitch that can run at people, can win free kicks and kind of drag the team forward when you're on the back foot. And Grealish might have been that option, I guess, and we didn't see him till midway through extra time.
Grealish has been excellent this season, and he's almost been the talisman, the sweetheart for England. I mean, I wouldn't say the talisman, that would probably fall to Raheem Sterling, but certainly that person you look to on the bench. But again, where's Jadon Sancho been this tournament? I know he's had this move to Manchester United in the background, which is probably why he didn't play the first two games, but he's played one game. And then he played like 30 seconds and was expected to score a penalty. This is a guy with a ridiculous record of goals and assists in the Bundesliga last season. And Grealish is great, but Saka coming on instead of Sancho. I mean, Saka's had a great tournament, but he came on and was ineffective. I thought he just looked off the pace. He looked like a rabbit in the headlights for a little bit, I thought. Henderson came on to replace Rice. I thought the substitution for Henderson, I thought he was poor. I thought the substitutions that Southgate made, whether they were the right ones or not, the players that he brought on just didn't look in the zone enough. Now, maybe that's because they weren't accustomed to the game from the start. I'm not so sure. In terms of bringing Grealish on, if you look at the substitutions Mancini made, and I think I'm right in thinking he used all of his substitutions, he just kept them coming. Every 10 minutes, there was a new player on the pitch. Every 10 minutes, and he kept it fresh. You know, and they even lost, I think, Insigne, or was it Immobile, came off, and Chiesa came off with an injury. They're two sort of better players came off, and they still managed to kind of really give it to England until pretty much the end. One substitution after a tournament in which England have played seven games, it's been a long season for all these players, you have to question that. And this is the thing, obviously the way England lost was disappointing, and Southgate has done amazingly well to get England to the final and deserves credit, but that doesn't mean because of what he's achieved he's immune to criticism in the final. And this is the narrative I don't understand. I've seen a lot of it on social media. Oh, we need to protect these players at all costs. We need to protect Southgate, blah, blah, blah. Of course we do. because they've achieved things that no one's ever achieved in a generation. But that doesn't mean they're just automatically shielded from any sort of criticism because of the way they performed and the decisions they made on the biggest stage. So I think that it's important to nuance the fact that England have done exceptionally well in this Euros, but also they are open to a bit of criticism. And my criticism of Southgate would be he got his substitutions wrong. And we've said that about him before. But it's not just Southgate, even though he makes the final decision. And actually, I thought he spoke quite admirably after the game, Southgate, in defeat, when discussing what happened in penalties and just in general the flow of the game. He said he was too disappointed, really, to shed too much light. But, you know, he's said multiple times this tournament the buck stops with him. And I think...
And he's very much taken responsibility as well. In his post-match interviews, he's kind of... It's very much... Yeah. It was my calls, it was my decisions, it's my fault.
Yeah, and I think that...
Which you'd 100% expect from him, the way he's handled himself. That's what you'd expect him to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is admirable that he's done that, but I feel like, unfortunately, this is the one time where he could have been a little bit braver. I mean, I understand in knockout games where if you're out, you're out, and you are thinking of what might have been. But you could, if there's one game in the tournament where you can just free hit, and if it goes backwards... and England lose convincingly after being battered by Italy, to be fair, then you just go, well, Italy battered us, but at least he gave it a go and brought on Grealish and brought on Sancho and brought on Rashford and actually gave him time to do something. Whereas instead, he just threw them under the bus, gave them 2 minutes to run around and expected them to score a penalty in the biggest pressure moment, biggest pressure game of their careers. So, you know, Southgate, admire him and he deserves utmost credit for what he's done, but I do think he got that wrong.
Going to talk about the penalties in just a second. One more thing I want to talk about from the game, Marley, is that Italian experience. The gamesmanship, the dark arts, call it what you will, the grabbing players round the collar and hauling them to the ground. Now, do you feel that, because I think certainly with the people I was watching the game with, there was a bit of a feeling that maybe the referee didn't control the game as much as he could have. There was some debate over whether the shirt pulling should have been a red card. For me, 100% not a red card, but there was some people that thought it was dangerous play. How did you feel about the way the Italians took advantage of that and maybe took advantage of certainly a softer referee than we've seen in the Premier League this season?
I thought all things considered, the referee had a good game. I liked how he let things go. He was a little bit more lenient until the Italians basically started to take the piss and go a bit too far with their sort of approach, which we knew they would. You know, I think in the preview we said that experience comes hand in hand with a bit of, you know, you can call it dark art, you can call it, you know, cheating, gamesmanship, sh-housery, whatever you want. That's my favourite word for it. So, and then you're seeing it, you know, manifested itself perfectly in the Chiellini thing where he pulled Saka's neck back, which is... It's a yellow card. It's not a red, is it? It's one of them where... But when a casual fan tuning in sees that, they think that's a red card. And, you know, it's one of them things, isn't it? Like, it sort of got everyone on the sort of hunt for Chiellini. Like, how's he allowed to do this? Like, my sister texted me in the family group, and I've never heard her talk about football in my 30 years on this planet. And she said, how can he get away with that? And I said, well... I said, I can explain it if you want, but it's a bit football-y, you know, because she's not a football fan. And she was like, yeah, can you? Because I need to know. It's winding me up. And I was like, basically, there's too much room to go and score a goal. Like, he was out wide. People might have tackled him in, he wasn't the last man type of thing. And she was like, all right, because you'd get simbin for that in rugby. And I was like, yeah, you would, because it would have been a high tackle in rugby. So, like, it was just one of them little loopholes that they exploited, but they knew that, and every defender in the world would have pulled Saka back if they had to chase him at the age of 37, chasing a 19-year-old round.
It was probably unfortunate that he happened to get hold of his collar rather than his shirt, isn't it? I mean, if he grabs hold of it 30 centimetres further down, then there's no one calling for that to be a red.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, I don't think he went for his neck. I think he's just, the height difference between the two is huge. Like, it's one 6'4", one's 5'8", 9".
He slipped under his arm, didn't he? Like what you were saying the other day, Marley. Saka, like, got around the side and like, went, you know, Chiellini put his arm out and Saka just ducked underneath it.
It was like running the gauntlet in Gladiators, you know, when you're a kid and you duck under, like, Wolf and then Rhino comes and, like, smashes you or whatever it was. It was like that, and, yeah... you know, he didn't mean to get the neck, but because he did, he made himself public enemy number one. But, you know, Chiellini's been like that for 15, 20 years now, so he's not really bothered. So, yeah, it's one of them. But they mastered that, and Benucci did bits and bobs as well, or came to the fore. I think Italy ended up with 6 yellow cards. I don't know how many England ended up with, but...
Just one, Maguire.
Was it just one?
Just the one.
It tells you everything.
Can I just say, Jim, I know we're going to move on in a sec. Jorginho on Jack Grealish. Was that a red card?
Oof.
Because he's punctured a hole in his leg. And he's gone in with his studs up. And he's got the ball, so you have to say he's got the ball. But so many times now in the modern game, we've seen players get the ball cleanly and with less contact with their studs up and be given red cards.
No, for me, what I'm going to say feels like a bit of a cop-out. If I'm going to say, you've seen him given. It's like, you've seen him given, you've seen him not given. And I think the standard of refereeing, or the way games have been refereed in the Premier League this season, has maybe given us a slightly distorted view of... And it's almost we've forgotten what it was like 4 years ago. And that's kind of where we went back to with the Euros, I think. And for the most part, that has been a good thing, because I think the games have been more fluid. I think the referees have allowed stuff to play. I think VAR has been executed better. That one, you could see, like, it wasn't a... It wasn't that dangerous, was it? It was more unfortunate.
He's put a hole in his leg.
He kind of came over the... He got the ball, but then slid over the top of it. So, I don't know.
But if he doesn't go in with his studs up, Jack Grealish doesn't get hurt.
Mm.
So, I mean, I agree with the referees. I think the referees on the whole have been very good, apart from the last two England games where I think they've been below par. I thought the referee last night was better than the referee for the semi-final. I thought the referee for the semi-final, England against Denmark, was awful. An awful, awful display, masked by the fact that England got through. And I think that in general, some of the referees that we've seen in the Euros would do a good job in the Premier League, to be honest with you. And I think maybe it is something that the Premier League needs to consider. Is it worth bringing referees from other countries over to our league? That why do all the referees have to all be English? I don't understand. What is this, some sort of unwritten rule or whatever? Because... You know, why don't we have the best referees from across Europe refereeing in our league? We can afford to pay them more.
There should be some sort of, like, I don't know, let's call it like a super league or something, you know, with the, with the best referees and the best clubs.
Let's not reopen that particular can of worms. Right, we're going to talk about Pelantis next because it did go to the spot. The game was decided that way, so that's what we'll focus on next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back to Football Social Daily, talking about England versus Italy, the final of the Euro 2020, which obviously went the Italians' way, decided by penalties. The focus, by the way, from here on in, is back to the domestic league, and you can get the latest domestic news on your team, whoever it is you support in the Premier League, at sport-social.co.uk, or the podcast from here on in for the next few weeks. We'll be focused on the build-up to next season as well. But let's talk about those spot kicks. You've mentioned it a couple of times, Niall, so I'm going to go and let Marley free on this one. We saw substitutions from Gareth Southgate bringing on Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho just before the final whistle, which wasn't 100% his fault because he was trying to bring him on for a maybe 5 minute period before, but the Italians just refused to let him do it. They were taking their throw-ins really quickly, weren't letting him make the substitution. So I think ideally he would have liked them to have had more game time before taking their spot kicks. But as it turned out, they had 15 seconds running about. I think their first touch for both of them was the penalty. I mean, that just felt, for us watching at home, like it was going to go wrong, didn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? The penalties were almost like an exact replica of the game, because it started well, didn't it? You know, Pickford saved... Save the first one. Was it was it Jorginho?
The second one he saved. Or was it the first one they scored?
Yeah, because Berardi scored the first one. Anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? When he saved the first one, we scored to sort of solidify that advantage. It was like, you know, everyone was like stood up waiting for, you know, for it to come home. I don't know. But it felt bad for Pickford, to be fair, because he did well in the penalties, and I did worry about him because, you know, because he's not the biggest goalkeeper, he has to have a big spring to save anything, whereas Donnarumma can fall either way and cover most of the goal at 6'5", and he just looks colossal in that goal when you're stepping up. So, the penalties, nobody, well, I don't know, maybe some people did, but I certainly didn't have a problem with Rashford and Sancho coming on just to take penalties. As a decision, I think that's the right one to make. I know Rashford's very good at penalties. I don't think I've seen him miss one.
What did you make of his penalty? Because I don't recall him doing that stuttering lot. He's clearly caught it off Paul Pogba, hasn't he? The little stuttering run-up that he did when he kind of
Graham Souness linking England's Euro defeat to Pogba. I don't disagree with the technique, because that technique is to wait for the goalkeeper at the last minute, and that worked. However, it requires not looking at the ball when you kick it, because you're looking at the goalkeeper and then you decide at the very last second to which way you're going to go, because if Donnarumma goes left, you go right, and it works. But when you don't look at the ball, you don't guarantee that contact, and I think he just scuffed it a little bit. It came off, he's trying to get it off the very middle of his side foot or towards his toe, and it came off like the side foot towards the heel, and he sort of scuffed it, and it's missed by inches, and it's hit the post, hasn't it? So a couple of inches either way, and it goes in. So, yeah, the technique is, it's iffy, but it was better than Sancho's, and it was better than Saka's as well, because they were just easy saves for the goalkeeper. They were nowhere near the corners. But I just felt bad for Saka getting the fifth one. Like, 19-year-old, he's a shy kid, he's not a brash sort of look at me type of player, and to stick him in for the fifth one, I mean, I'd probably put Rashford on the fifth one or Kane, and had one of the whichever one didn't at the start, and had them sort of get us off to a good start. But the order just knackered it, really. And Saka, I just felt so bad for him walking up. I was thinking, I don't fancy him here. I've not seen him take a penalty for Arsenal. Fair play for having the stones to step up and do it, but also, could Sterling not take it with having way more experience? But then I said to my mates, like, does Sterling not want to miss that because of the media, because of the crap he would get, off the back of it? Like, if he missed it, would has that played into his psyche at all, and said, no, Gareth, I'd rather not take one unless I have to, I don't know, it's just one of the things, it's all hindsight now, isn't it? But even at the time, Saka didn't look like the right penalty taker, and certainly not the fifth one. I'd give it to Grealish or to Sterling, so, yeah.
I mean, Southgate's taken responsibility for the order. He said, it was me, I picked it, I decided who was going to take him, and it was based on what we were doing in training. We know the England team have spent a lot of time preparing for penalties, not just the act of taking them, but the kind of the ceremony around it in terms of walking from the centre spot and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, Niall, it can't just be the manager that makes that decision. There's got to be some input from the players. Some are going to go, I fancy it. Some are going to go, I don't fancy it. So it can't just be a manager's responsibility. But ultimately, I guess he's got to have some kind of oversight on who takes what and who steps up to the spot.
For me, it's all Southgate. He chose the order, and it was the wrong order. Saka, 19 years old, taking the fifth penalty. Terrible penalty from Sancho. Terrible penalty from Saka. Also, we have to say, Donnarumma, who's on his way to PSG, is very, very good at saving penalties, and he's massive. He's one of the best penalty-saving goalkeepers in the world. So, it was always going to be difficult. I think you have to lie the blame at the feet of Southgate. Where was Sterling? Marley's touched upon why he might not have stepped up for one. Where was he? He was talking about coming into this tournament and owning the tournament. Wembley being his own backyard. He could see the arch from his garden where he grew up. This was the tournament where he was going to be the one that carried England. And he has done. He's done brilliantly. But when it really came to that final moment where you want your best players taking penalties, where was he? Where was Grealish? Why was Harry Maguire, a centre-back, taking the second penalty? He absolutely nailed it, by the way. He broke the camera. He hit it so hard into the top corner, he smashed the camera.
Best penalty.
he just mullered it.
It was a goal kick, wasn't it? It was like, it was, because it was still rising. It'd still be going now if the net wasn't there. We pelted
it. This is the thing. I mean, I've spoken about these run-ups a few times, and you can't question the run-up if the ball goes in, but when it doesn't, you're always going to point at that. And I think players are almost focusing more on the run-up to try and put the goalkeeper off than they are doing their bit, and their bit is putting the ball in the net. Frank Lampard was talking about it on punditry after the game, saying he never did those run-ups. He just ran up and blasted it. And Frank Lampard missed a penalty in an FA Cup final once. Thankfully, it didn't matter from a Chelsea perspective. But he didn't really miss many penalties, particularly in pressure situations. Nor did Shearer. They just ran up and belted it. If you kick it hard enough, the keeper can't get there.
That's what happened with Kane's. Kane, like, Donnarumma went the right way, but he hit it at 60 mile an hour, so he couldn't physically get there. So,
which is what I saw Rashford do against PSG for Man United a few seasons ago in that famous Champions League game, where he just smacked it into the same corner that Kane went in. And I thought that was what he was going to do. What I will say is that penalty shootout shouldn't, and hopefully won't, define those three players. It definitely won't define Marcus Rashford. Marcus Rashford's legacy is bigger than hitting the post in a penalty shootout in the Euros final. His legacy is what he's done off the pitch. And he's only 23 years old. So he's got at least a decade left of playing football, you'd imagine, at the top level. And maybe even a few more tournaments with England as well. Missing a penalty against Italy in the Euros final is not going to define Marcus Rashford. The way he stepped up off the field to show leadership in a way that those you'd expect leadership from haven't shown. And some of the contempt towards Rashford, saying stick to penalties and not politics. That is just so obnoxious.
One of those comments was made by a Tory MP as well, incidentally.
Well, I'm not surprised, am I? The least shocking statement of the day. They were shown up. The government was shown up by a young lad who wants better for people in this country. And that is why this England team has captured the hearts and imaginations of so many people in this country, because of the way they've conducted themselves, not just on the pitch, but off it. And talking of off of it, some of the displays we've seen from the England supporters, or supposed England supporters, has been shocking. Some of the abuse that these three players have received on social media for the colour of their skin, for missing penalties, has been shocking. And yet again, we're in the same situation. After a big game and a big moment, a pressure situation in this sport, we're seeing horrific abuse being directed at people. Sancho has got the world at his feet. That won't define him either. At least it's his responsibility now to step out of that shadow. Beckham kicked out in the World Cup in 98. In 99, he won a treble with Manchester United and became one of the most iconic footballers probably to ever play the game. Not in terms of skill or quality, but in terms of recognisability and, you know, the level he's on in terms of being an icon of the world game. He's certainly up there. He transformed his misfortune into something more positive. It's now up to Sancho and Saka to do that. Like I say, much like Rashford, Saka has got another 4 years on Rashford. And he's got the option now, the ability now to turn that disappointment into something positive. For me, they're three poor penalties because they all missed the target, particularly Sancho and Saka's. Feeble penalties, but Southgate has to take the blame for choosing those players to take a penalty, choosing the order. I mean, even so, why not just put Harry Kane fifth? Stepping up to take the fifth penalty, England need to score to stay alive. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where you can look back and hindsight's a brilliant thing, as you said before, but there are so many questions. And that's the one thing I didn't want to be waking up this morning feeling was, why have I got so many questions about what might have been? You know, I just think Italy were the better team and probably did deserve to win. You know, heartbreak's almost in England's DNA, isn't it? Penalties, losing it, oh, yeah. Euros final.
We've seen this film before. We know what happens.
I'll be honest, I was less disappointed than I thought I would be. I really was. I just kind of knew it was going to happen. You just kind of, you know, numb yourself to it a little bit. What I would say, though, is the win over Germany, I was more excited about that than any other game throughout the tournament. So despite the fact they've lost on penalties in the final, and there are questions that will undoubtedly be asked for the next 55 years about what happened and why the order was chosen, there'll be documentaries, there'll be Channel 5 talking heads programs about it in a couple of years' time. But they have given us a journey that many people have felt connected to, and they can be proud of that, and they will bounce back, and they have to bounce back, because that is what you need to do as an elite sports person. And I'm sure those three who miss penalties will. All I'd say is, if I was Jordan Pickford, I'd be absolutely fuming, because he's done everything he can. He's done his bit.
Unlucky to save two and lose a shootout.
You'd be fuming as a keeper. You'd be absolutely raging. And I know they're his mates, and I know they've been through the mud together in this tournament, and they, you know, they've done what they've had to do to get to this stage. But Pickford saving two penalties in a shootout and your team doesn't win, you'd be fuming as a keeper.
You did mention the abuse that some players got there, which we will talk about briefly in a moment, but you could see how much it meant to those players at the end of the pitch. The amount of them were, that were devastated. Saka was devastated. Declan Rice had red eyes. They were... they'd given everything, and I think they came up short, and that really hurt the players. And I think anyone who is posting those abusive comments, whatever level of anger and disappointment persuades someone to go and make comments like that, and I can't even imagine how you get to that point, but you do not hurt as much as those players hurt on that pitch last night after losing that final. We will talk about the reaction and the behaviour of some England fans next. We're also going to talk about Italy a little bit, and we'll do it next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back, Football Social Daily. It is the morning after the night that was as England crashed out of the Euros in the final against Italy. It was on penalties. And what we haven't done yet, we've kind of picked the England performance apart, but I think we haven't given the Italians maybe the credit they deserve for winning the European Championships. For me, I think they've probably been the best team throughout the tournament. And if it was any other opposition other than England, I would have been delighted at seeing the Italians lifting that trophy last night, because I think they're quite a likeable team in terms of the characters that are on board. I think the fans have approached the tournament in the right way, unlike England fans, as we'll talk about shortly. They've deserved it at the end of this run, this, was it 34 games unbeaten for the Italians. Roberto Mancini, he seems like a bloke who's got his act together, and he just seems like a nice character as well. So it what I'm trying to say, Marlo, is it's difficult to be too upset. If you're going to lose to someone, you might as well lose to the Italians.
Yeah, you know, if you lose to someone, to be fair, they caught the eye early on, didn't they? With the win over Turkey, and then everybody was saying, well, what about these lot? And a lot was made of their 30-odd game unbeaten run, which I thought is the most overhyped stat ever, because half of those games are against Lithuania and Bulgaria, and it's just not opposition. That's one of the loopholes of international football. But you know, I suppose you still got to beat who's in front of you and what have you. But yeah, they I'm probably the same as you. If we went out in the quarters, I would have wanted Italy to win, the tournament. You know, I've been there on holiday 5 or 6 times. I love the country. It's an amazing place, and you know. Yeah, they are quite a likeable team. You can embrace the dark arts and the gamesmanship a little bit if you're in neutral as well, and say, yeah, I'd have done that in that situation. But just a bit annoying when you see one of your players getting yanked back by his neck when he's running away from a near 40-year-old centre back. So it kind of warps it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, considering they didn't qualify for the World Cup in 2018, that is a huge turnaround, and that's all Mancini, because he's embraced the spirit. He's had them back to what they're good at, you know, the 4-3-3 system. I think they were messing around with three at the back and stuff when he came in, and picked up the pieces from the previous regime. So happy for him, he's done well. But, you know, just disappointing that it had to be England that he beat in the final. But I just hoped it would have been sort of the perfect end to Southgate's sort of journey, that 25 years ago he missed a penalty, and then 25 years later he could win the same competition at the same stadium, but on penalties. But wasn't to be.
For the Italian story, there's Nella. We talk about the England story and how this journey and this progression of this young team, but for the Italians, Niall, it's a redemption as well for them, because since winning in 2006, they've kind of done nothing. And I heard an Italian journalist describing it as the Italian football has been through hell since they won the 2006 tournament. So it is kind of a... It's been important progress for them as a nation in terms of embracing this slightly new style of football that Mancini's brought in, and actually seeing some success on the pitch again from a nation that does have a huge legacy in international football.
Well, we talk about going to the lowest of the low, and Italian football going through hell, not qualifying for the World Cup, is the Italian football equivalent of hell. So actually, in terms of what Mancini had to work with from a starting point, it was kind of all in his favour, really. If he failed, there wasn't really too much else to have said other than the fact that this is a bad generation of Italian players We've lost our spark, we've lost our mojo. But instead, what Mancini's managed to do is build it back up and take it to a point of which it's a three-year project, which has culminated in success. And you can see the unity and the spirit which we spoke about when previewing the final that the Italians have had throughout the tournament. And, you know, players like Spinazzola, who got injured midway through the tournament and missed the last two games, the semi-final and the final, the way that they kind of cheered for him after they got through to the final, the way that he was part of the celebrations last night, hopping around on his crutches and smiling with the rest of the team and stuff like that. So, you know, they do have this spirit and unity, which is something that Mancini's sort of had to instill. I mean, what's remarkable is how things can change for you in the blink of an eye. So I thought Chiesa was one of the standout performers for Italy amongst a couple that they've had throughout the tournament. He wasn't even in the squad, I don't think, before the start of the tournament, or at least he wasn't due to go to the tournament. And he's just gone and been an absolute nuisance. So I think that, you know, Mancini, you have to give him credit. You have to give the Italians credit. But, I mean, it's just typical Italy and the mentality that they have to suggest that because they didn't qualify for one World Cup, they've been through hell. I mean, that was their 10th or 11th major tournament final. Four World Cups, two Euros now. I mean, to win 50% of the major finals that you're in, that's not bad, is it? I mean, to even get to 10 or 11 is a remarkable achievement. So they are a nation who knows how to win on the tournament stage, and not even getting to a World Cup would have been an embarrassing thing for the Italians. And so I suppose the starting point and the expectations were low, which makes this victory for them ever so sweet. So congratulations to Italy. I thought they played very, very well. They dominated England for the majority of the game, probably did deserve to win in the end. And it's the culmination of quite a nice story. And I'm going to side with Marley when he says, you know, it would have been a nicer story for England to kind of finish it in the way that the Italians did, but wasn't to be in the end. And you have to congratulate the players and Roberto Mancini on a great tournament.
Right, we have to talk about the behaviour of England fans before and after the final whistle. Unfortunately, some fans, again, embarrassing and shameful on various levels. Before the match, outside the Wembley Stadium, we saw fans with no tickets rushing the barriers trying to get in. We saw issues throughout London, people wrecking buses, wrecking landmarks, throwing beer in the air. The kind of thing you've come to expect from some England fans. But I guess worse than all of that was the abuse that has been handed out to Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho and Saka as well for their missed penalties. And it is, unfortunately, again, racist abuse. It's really difficult to know what we can say that's new about this. And it's really difficult to know what the FA can do to combat this, Marley, other than it's disgusting, there's no place for it in football, and people who are sending those messages and posting those things on social media deserve criminal proceedings taken against them. There just should be no tolerating it, but that's not anything unusual to say because yet again we're talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, within seconds of the final whistle going last night, trending on Twitter was Saka's Instagram, and I went to it and it had the latest post he had was yesterday, and it said all eyes on tomorrow. Just to, you know, from Saturday, he posted just a picture of him in training, and it had 15,000 comments, and that's high, but not sort of crazy. I've just looked at it again, and it's had 178,000 comments, and you know, you start scrolling, and all I was seeing at first was support, and, you know, keep your chin up, keep your head up. This won't define you, as we were saying before, really. So I was thinking, oh, you know, this is more positive than I thought. But then I thought, if I scroll for another 2 minutes, I'm going to start seeing some dodgy stuff. And then, sure, lo and behold, somebody commented saying, the abuse on this post is disgusting. So I thought, oh, I'm nearly at the abuse now. And then I found, scroll down a few more, there's monkey emojis, there's banana emojis, there's all kinds of words being chucked around that I won't say because now I'll have to wear the bleep button out in the edit of the podcast with all the stuff that was said. But I mean, also as well, to be fair, every one racist or negative comment, there was like 70 or 80 replies calling that person like out for it. But I mean, that doesn't solve it, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think there is a cure for this. As I've said before, I mean, we can all hope to live in a non-racist world and with stuff where just stupid stuff like this doesn't happen. But I think it's very far away. I think the world on the whole is getting more racist as we move on. You're seeing like right wing parties get control of European countries and stuff and into government in places and things like that. So it's being seeded and drip feeded in through that. So, you know, I mean, there's never been a time in the history of mankind where racism hasn't been an issue. So why would we solve it in 2021? Like, just like that. It's just, it's so hard to say that, you know, let's just all stop doing it. Oh, that's fine. You could ask every single person, you know, and every single person would say, you know, I would never dream of writing something like that. But you can't meet everyone in the world, and there are assholes that are going to do that, and it's just there, and it's just there isn't an obvious solution to it, because I think personally the way to stop it is to ignore it, but also that doesn't help the person, like, so it's a complete catch 22. So if you're getting like bullied or something at school, if you ignore it and not react, it goes away a little bit. Like, it can go away, and it can be a way of solving it. But with things like this, you can't ignore it because it's in the public eye. So you can't have that same thing of just, I'm just going to ignore this, because you have to have a really thick skin. You have to have the mental health of a warrior to just not let it get to you. And especially as like a 19-year-old kid like Saka, it's not a thing, so it's a real sort of catch 22 situation where there's no obvious solution for it, but it's gonna drag on for years and years, and it won't go in my lifetime, I don't think.
It's incredibly difficult to get your head around as well, because there's so many layers to this in terms of how angry someone has to be to make those comments. The fact that they've spotted the three penalty takers and gone, oh, well, this is three black kids. That's the common factor that I can pick upon. It kind of boggles your mind a little bit. I mean, Gary Neville made a really interesting point on this morning. No, I don't know if you've seen it. But he said Boris Johnson needs to take some responsibility for this, because Gareth Southgate came out and said, look, the England players will be taking the knee and it's solidarity against racism. And then Boris Johnson's response to that was, well, England fans have a right to boo that. But I can't remember exactly what he said. I'm paraphrasing that horribly, probably. But pretty much said he failed to condemn people who were booing it. I think that was the stance he took. And so that kind of normalises this type of behaviour, because you're saying, yeah, we don't need to support this stand. So, and this is a man who's compared women wearing burqas to letterboxes. I mean, the tarred brush of racism isn't that far away from him previously. So I guess he does have to take some responsibility. When you've got the leader of a country making statements like that, it makes it more and more difficult to stamp out this behaviour.
Now, I don't want to sound like a hypocrite here, because we've spoken about this whole idea of booing taking the knee before on the podcast, and I was quite clear with what I said in terms of the beauty of living in a country like this is that people are able to express their opinions on pretty much everything. And it's very rare that an opinion is either right nor wrong. However, in this instance, having an opinion on whether being racist, there is no opinion. It is simply wrong. To discriminate someone because of the colour of their skin, that is wrong. But the reason that the England team are taking the knee was very, very clearly outlined before the tournament by Gareth Southgate and the players. And the reason that they gave as to why they keep taking the knee was nothing to do with political organisations or political viewpoints, despite the fact that that gesture may have been associated with certain political organisations and viewpoints somewhere along the line in the last 12 months. The reason that they take the knee, their reason for taking the knee, is because they're sick of exactly what's happened. They're sick of people going onto their Instagram pages and writing monkey emojis and banana emojis and writing racist words and singling these players out for the colour of their skin. That's why they're taking the knee. So yes, I agree. When you do have a prime minister that says you know, fans have a right to boo the knee. That is a dangerous narrative to say. Now, even though I've just basically said fans should have the right to boo whatever they want, I also feel that as the leader of the country, you do need to choose your words more carefully. And I do think it makes him look a complete and utter hypocrite because of the way that he's dealt with the situation. Unfortunately, politics is far too partisan. It's almost like a team sport. This isn't a sport, this is people's lives. You know, and it gets way more serious than that. And I think that what you need to remember is, you know, it isn't just the fact that, you know, because Marcus Rashford has made the government look a fool, he's an enemy to people. He isn't. He's a gift. He's exactly what politics should have. Someone who is willing to stand up for a community and make a difference. That's what politics is. That's what it should be. That's what being an MP should be. And I don't like all of this. I mean, talk about keep politics out of football. These people that say taking the knee, keep politics out of football and all of this. Why is Johnson rocking up to games wearing an England shirt? Why is Johnson decorating 10 Downing Street with flags, England flags? He's the Prime Minister of the UK.
Not from the start of the tournament, we should also point out.
There's so much hypocrisy, Jim, to the point where it's almost like it's just a game to these people. See how popular they can make themselves look. But absolutely, this needs to stop. What I do think needs to happen is people that use these platforms to, you know, spout racist abuse, these platforms need to be regulated. How many times? I mean, you can have a blackout on social media. You can, you know, post your support for people who have been racially abused and you can log out of your Twitter account for 2 weeks as a protest. Do you think Twitter cares? Do you think Instagram cares? Do you think Facebook cares? They need to do more. They need to do something because this is where most of this abuse is being perpetuated, through social media. And yes, racism exists. It exists in the pubs and on the streets. Everywhere in this country it exists. Marley's right. It's existed from the start of mankind. It's not all of a sudden going to disappear overnight. But the more visible it is, the more dangerous it becomes, because people think that if they can get away with doing that without punishment, which is the case, then it becomes acceptable. And it isn't acceptable. And the way to show that is by sanctioning changes to the way people operate on social media, to the point where they are liable to be fined or prosecuted or something because of the way they've behaved. And that isn't happening at the moment. And unfortunately, we will continue to see this until changes are made by people that are able to facilitate those changes. People like me and Marley and yourself have tried to facilitate change by blacking out social media, boycotting social media. It's made no difference. The support we're showing is there, and it's a strong message we've sent. But at the same time, something more needs to happen. Something more needs to be done. And it's unfortunately up to the powers that be to make those changes.
A really disappointing end to what has been, from football, from society and football, at the end of this tournament. But I think we finished on a downer, but the important thing to take away from the European Championships is how well the England team have handled themselves through this tournament. It was a disappointing football result in the end, but this team we should be incredibly proud of and incredibly supportive for, and they are a young team that are full of promise, and we go into Qatar in 18 months' time with every chance of doing incredibly well in that tournament. So if you are disappointed, if you are upset after last night's results, everyone is, but let's just not forget the successes and let's not forget the achievements of this England team over the last four
weeks. Sorry, it's interesting. 20 minutes ago, Jack Grealish has put on Twitter that he said he wanted to take one and told Southgate. Because somebody is... Roy Keane had a go at Saka, saying, like, why was Saka picked and not Sterling or Grealish? Grealish has replied to it saying, I wanted to take one. The gaffer has made so many right decisions through this tournament, and he did tonight, but I won't have people say that I didn't want to take a penno when I said I will. So that kind of sums up what we were saying before about how it was Southgate's choice.
Not helpful, is it?
But it is a bit hanging him out to dry a little bit.
But who knows? I mean, he might have been skied every single penalty in training.
Maybe.
I'm sure that's something we can discuss another day. That is it for today's Football Social Daily. Thank you very much for listening. Like I said, we're going to be building up to the Premier League season returning. What, 6 weeks or something until the first balls are kicked in? That, not long to go. And all the podcasts on Football Social Daily will keep you in the loop for the latest news, the latest transfers, transfer news. That's going to heat up over the next few weeks as well. So make sure you subscribe, make sure you follow, and you'll get the latest episodes as soon as they're ready. Marley, Niall, nice one, boys. We'll be back on Premier League duty on the next Football Social Daily.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.